Hello, magic seekers, and welcome to It Turns Out She's a Witch.
We're your hosts, Laura and Shannon,
and welcome to our podcast coven. Turns Out She's a Witch podcast would like to begin today by acknowledging the Darkinyung people, traditional custodians of the land on which we live and record the podcast. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Hello to our beautiful podcast coven. We are back with you for another episode of Turns Out She's a Witch. We are delighted to be recording in person today with our next guest over a cup of tea. He is the founder of the Temple of the Soul, a holistic approach to health and well-being, offering Reiki, energy healing, shamanic healing, holistic counselling and psychedelic integration right here on the Central Coast. Located at the beautiful La Tierra Curativa, that is situated in a lush valley surrounded by trees and wildlife, the energy of the land lends itself to this healing work. We look forward to delving into many topics today. Welcome to the podcast, Andrew Edmonds.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Pleasure. Much nice to be here in person with you both.
Yeah, it is.
It is nice. And we've all just had a big giggle about the computer working and the computer not working and pronunciation of La Tierra Curativa. How did I go?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yes, definitely your energy affects electronic devices. Yeah. It happens all the time.
Yeah. More and more so.
Yeah.
It's getting very frustrating.
And I thought also before we kick into everything, the name of your beautiful place, what that means.
Yes, so it means the healing land. Mm. Yeah, and so it lends itself very well to the work that we do there. And it has a beautiful energy. Like when we came to see the place the first time, I could just feel it straight away. And I looked across to Mel, my partner, and said, "Can you feel that?" And she's like, "Yep." And it was just meant to be.
Done deal.
Yeah.
We'll have to get there.
Yeah, we will. We'll have to come and visit. Yeah, definitely. You're not that far away. But
no. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. So, Andrew, a question we love to ask all of our guests on the podcast. What does the word witch mean to you?
So I'm going to upset some of the male witches here, but, you know, I do think
go on. We love you.
I do think of, you know, the classic archetype, which is, you know, usually a female in the archetypical, in our stories as well, and really a wise woman, wise person, someone who's in tune with the seasons and the energies of the cycles of the moon and nature. And that aspect of ceremonial magic and ritual, you know, self-exploration, self-change and hopefully affecting the outside world for the better.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I hope no one's too upset about that. I think there's, you know, certain interpretations everywhere, and that's certainly not an individualistic one, is it?
No. Yeah. And I know male witches as well.
But,
It's just that's sort of what I grew up with in, you know, the stories and movies and everything. It was always really women.
Yeah. Certainly that divine feminine energy, isn't it?
That's
led. Lovely.
Yeah.
This is probably a huge question, but how did Temple of the Soul come to be? I'm sure it's been quite the journey.
It is a long answer to that question.
That's good. That's what we're here for.
I'd always been drawn to the spiritual, mystical, you know, I had an existential crisis at about 12 or so.
Quite
young, apparently. And then I really started delving into, you know, Wicca and the occult and shamanism and anthropology and psychology and all of this comparative religion and philosophy. And that was always a really strong theme for me. However, I then got into IT and that was my work.
So interesting, hey.
Very different.
Yeah, it's like a holiday for the brain and for the work.
And that was, I think, you know, at that time there was a lot of money in IT and it looked like good career opportunities, et cetera. But my spiritual leanings were always there in the background. And eventually, of course, I got very disenchanted with IT and the spiritual nature and more important work came back. And then I started learning, you know, I'd always had a lot of meditation background, which helped a lot with my mental health in particular, and, you know, various practices. It was really when I started learning Reiki and energy work that significantly impacted me. And I thought, I started learning it for me. It was just for my personal development and growth. But then I realized, hang on, I can help people with this. I also was into fitness a lot then, so I had my personal training certificate. And so that's kind of where it started. It was personal, a holistic approach to personal training, as well as the energy work. And then it sort of has evolved into what it is today since then.
Loads of modalities have just layered
and evolved. Anything that helped me, and all of them were really things I didn't have any intention of using them with people, except maybe for psychotherapy, which is the latest, you know, arrow in the bow.
Very cool.
All of them were things that helped me so much and that I was drawn to for my healing.
Such an organic way for things to evolve through learned experience. Because you get to experience it on both sides as a recipient and then the learnings and then, you know, integrating that and offering it to others. It's so authentic, isn't it? It just makes sense.
Yeah, it just makes sense to me. It helped me so much and I know it can help others and I've seen that.
Beautiful. How lucky we all are.
Absolutely. And I'm really interested to hear more about your work with the tobacco plant, in particular the Mapacho ceremony.
Yes. So when I first came across tobacco, I had no idea it was a plant medicine. You know, I just knew cigarettes cause cancer. But I was forwarded, I was on a mailing list and I was forwarded this email about tobacco diet. I had no, I didn't know the person running it. I didn't even know the person who forwarded it on. No idea that it was a medicine, but I just had that calling. I had that feeling, something said, you have to do this. And it was so strong. I don't, you know, very rare to have such a strong calling to something.
Yeah. Got your attention.
Yes. So I was in a place then where I'm like, okay, I follow these, you know, you follow intuition. I'd learned to trust my intuition by this stage. And so off I went to the Northern Rivers for a week, not really knowing what I was in for.
I love that blissful ignorance.
And that's a good thing. I don't think I wanted to know exactly what I was in for.
You probably wouldn't have gone.
No, probably not. So, yeah, we got up this there and this lady who sort of Peruvian, Chinese, Australian ancestry, holding this ceremony space. And I wasn't sure what really to make of her or anything else. And the ceremony, drinking this, you know, black liquid brew made from tobacco. And
I can't imagine that would have tasted.
It did not taste pleasant, no. It did not smell pleasant either. But, you know, and I drank it and instantly felt nauseous. But then, you know, I felt so present and grounded in my body and in the space that I was in. I'd never felt that present and grounded. And I could feel it then starting to move through my body, you know, energy shooting and rushing through my body, things clearing and unblocking, no real story about what it was doing or communication, but it was just doing its thing.
Yep.
So tobacco, because we like to personify everything, tobacco is personified as the father.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of, you know, goes in, does what it needs to do, and right, off you go, you're all good.
Away you go.
Yeah,
away you go. Wow. Kicked out of the nest.
Yes. And in that night, it was quite a cold. It was somewhere in winter. And I remember I went to bed, you know, still sort of feeling nauseous, eventually got to sleep and had a very powerful dream. It was so intense. I woke up and threw all the covers off me, you know, and then that was when I found the communication from tobacco is more often in the dream space, vivid, intense dreams.
Wow.
And then the shaman, the curandero, she came in the morning and said, "Oh, a lot of anger came up in your dream, didn't it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, how did you know?"
Yeah.
And it's just this little smile she had.
Wow. Didn't say much,
you know, just enough. And on the second last night of that dieta, so that was 7 nights of drinking tobacco.
That's long.
It's a lot, yeah. And not doing much else and not having much food.
Yeah.
In fact, I fasted for 3 days in that space too.
Snakes.
Yeah. The second last night I had, again, a very strong dream, and I got a message to go to Peru and keep doing this work. And that really freaked me out. Like,
oh, yeah, because it was that consistent or clear?
Just terrifying.
Okay.
Because I, you know, I had my life in Sydney.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, so I got up freaking out and tried to find my teacher.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, I had this dream, and she'd just gotten out of the shower by this point. So she was wrapped in a towel with her hair wet. And she's like,
and you're in her bedroom. I need to speak with you.
Not in the bedroom, but in the shared space. Yeah. And she's like, "Okay, just sit down. I'm going to go get dressed and we can talk." And I'm like, "Okay."
Yeah.
And then she said, you know, like, "Yep, you can come and stay with me." And,
oh, wow.
And so.
Wow.
Eventually I went to Peru and continued that work for 14 dietas with space in between and teachings and traveling around following her. And after the 14th, then I learned how to hold ceremony.
Yeah.
Mm. So I could do just, you know, generally 1 or 2 nights with people here.
Yeah.
Not the full dietas yet, although that might be in the new year.
Mm.
it's been very powerful to see. And it's still that same case here where people kind of come across tobacco and they're not really sure, wait, is this a plant medicine?
Yeah.
You know, this whole process. So yeah, that's something I now hold regularly.
Yeah.
And see pretty dramatic changes in people.
Wow. Yeah.
Over that, even just a one night ceremony.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a powerful, powerful plant medicine. Mm. Yeah, very healing.
Wow.
Yeah.
During that time, especially when you were learning to offer that yourself. Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of self-care that you're learning to be able to hold that space? And
the process of the teachings, or I suppose we could say the course, right, of those 14-week-long dietas.
Mm.
So one was, the first one is working with tobacco, and then the next 12 are tobacco with another tree.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're developing, cultivating a relationship with these trees as well. And the last one was a whole lot of tobacco. It's awful.
Wow.
Hectic. All of those spirits of those trees and tobacco become allies.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's old school teaching, right? Mm. You're not given a lot of theory. And in fact, often you're not given any theory. You're not even told what you're working with as a tree.
Wow.
You have to figure it out.
It's all... Wow.
It's all internal. Experiential, internal.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Mm. It's that old way of teaching, and it is hugely powerful. And then I'd have long chats with my teacher.
Okay.
You know, I'd say, because I'd notice, you know, if my thoughts or energies circled around a particular topic, like, you know, one of the early trees was about a lot about balancing the masculine and feminine, and I could feel this kind of thing happening. And so then I'd say to the teacher the next day, it feels like this, and she's like, yep. And then she might tell me a little bit more, mm-hmm. and eventually might tell me the name of the tree I was working with, and you know, and a couple we could like go and find in the forest, in the jungle as well, to actually see them in person. But so that that process is really the thing that the learning by doing and watching her hold space and hold ceremony and feeling what was going on, that was primarily the learning.
Yeah.
And so right at the end, you know, she showed me how to make the medicine and what process to brew it and took me through, you know, how to do the ceremony. But I'd already actually learnt a lot of it by that process.
And looking after yourself in that as well.
It was all the self work. So much clearing, and it was a pretty tough training.
Yeah, it sounds very involved.
Yeah.
But necessarily so, right?
Necessary.
There's no shortcuts, is there?
There's no shortcuts. And this was a very
problem sometimes in the industry.
Yes. Mm. There's no magic bullet. You know, and this is quite a short shamanic apprenticeship or training.
Okay.
You know, it was over the course of about a year. Mm. Often, say, for something like ayahuasca, that training process might be 5-10 years. So tobacco is quite quick because it just blasts through everything.
Just gets in there. Its way with you and be gone.
Pretty much. Does its thing. Okay, you're good. Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
When you were describing what that original drink that you were served in the Northern Rivers, it just took me back to when I was 12, we went on the only trip that I've been on to where my mum's from in Peru, and we went up to Machu Picchu, but because of the altitude, they make a tea for you to as an antidote for altitude sickness. It's called tea. Mate de coca. It's like on the cocaine leaves, but it was horrible. It smelled, to me being 12, it smelled like dog poo. And everyone had to drink it. And my brother actually tipped his into a pot plant. I think it was actually fake. And then he showed the tour guide, look, it's empty. He just filled it up again.
Oh, well.
I was crying, I don't have fond memories of that.
I quite like the coca tea.
You quite liked
it. It was nice and gentle.
Maybe in comparison, or maybe my palate wasn't yet.
It wasn't the tastiest thing,
I was not a fan. But when you're like, this tea and it didn't smell great, I was like, oh, I remember a tea not being so nice.
I'd love to know before we move on to is what would people come to you for the tobacco ceremonies? Like any specific things that they're dealing with, or is it kind of a broad?
It's pretty broad. I guess the three main things that people come to tobacco for, as it's a very healing, clearing plant, just healing anything in general and clearing negative energy. It's also very good for guidance. So you, typically people might come with questions around work or relationships. They tend to be the main things. And the insights for that will just sort of come through as a knowing, or you might wake up the next morning just with the answer and the path to get there. It's very practical.
That's
in its
helpful.
Knowledge.
And
with a lot of energy to move in that direction, just like, especially if there was resistance there before, that resistance is gone, or you've got more energy just to push through. It's also very good for protection. So protection from other people's energies or negative energies that you might not want to take on. So in terms of holding a space, the ceremony space, I have a very strong protection. So I don't get buffeted much by other people's energies. So they're the sort of main things that people come to tobacco with for.
Incredible. I think we need to do this.
We're spirit junkies. Oh, speaking of which, you offer many modalities. One that I would love to know more about is, you know, the shamanic healing. Can you share with our listeners what this entails?
Yeah, so this is a bit of an amalgamation of the shamanic work and the energy work. And so we open in a shamanic context ceremonially. So, you know, calling the quarters or calling the four directions in shamanic language and calling in allies. So we're creating the space first. Then working with the tobacco smoke as a clearing, a way to start clearing. It's a bit like sage on steroids, I suppose. Yeah. Australia. Wow. Yeah. then working with a tobacco snuff called Harpe, which is blown up the nose. Again, a lot of working with tobacco isn't particularly pleasant.
Really?
It does sting quite a bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you warn people? Or are you like just experiences?
Definitely warn them so they know. And that's, you know, a little bit like drinking but shorter.
Okay.
So it has that grounding presence. And especially when it's after it's blown off up both nostrils, the mind just stops. And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the thoughts stop and you're just present and feeling the energy of it move down through the body. And I'm, you know, tuning into the person to feel what they're experiencing so I can reflect some of what's happening and maybe ask them some questions about what happened, you know, like, oh, did you feel that grief in the heart or whatever it is. Then we move more on to the energy work, which is I've learned a bunch of different energy modalities, so it's just kind of all of them thrown in along with the shamanic sort of stuff, which is sometimes kind of pulling stuff out of people or whatever it might present as. Yeah. and finishing with the drum, the medicine drum, sort of drumming on top of a person to ground them back into the body and feel that real beautiful physical vibration of sound that the drum has.
Powerful.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah.
Sounds great.
It does. Sounds incredible.
I'm always, you mentioned it a second time just then, how you get so grounded with the tobacco. And when you were describing it the first time, how nauseous you felt and how gross you felt. But alongside this groundedness, it's just incredible to even try and imagine those two. I can't marry them in my mind the way you described it. It's just, I suppose that's what experience is as opposed to trying to imagine what it's like. It's experiencing those two things at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Sounds crazy until you're there experiencing it, right?
Yes, yes. Mm. And you know, the nausea doesn't generally last the whole time, but there's usually some nausea involved somewhere.
Yeah, yes, that's right, because, you know, you're exiting something and entering another liminal space, right?
Yes, so, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny how you always feel quite giddy and a bit gross. Yep. During those times.
Yeah.
I know I do. Yeah. Any sort of energy work, I'm like, bleh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, but I want to. I'm like looking for a bin just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a chucker.
And, you know, there are lots of ways we can purge energy too. Like laughter is a way to purge energy or tears or yawning or shaking or sometimes out it comes the mouth.
Yeah.
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 Old Vomitron. Yeah. I'm a nurse and very disgusting. I'm not going to apologise for that either. I like grossing Shannon out.
Oh, she does.
Yeah, it does it. It's
all the time. Usually while we're eating.
Yes, especially while we're eating.
No, it is. It's fascinating. I think back even to different times in my life. I think there was energy upgrades or big energy shifting and things like that. And I'd go through periods where I'd have like massive head spins or like full blown vomiting or and it makes sense because you're just trying to shift.
Yep, in whatever way. Yeah, whatever way works. Yeah.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. And one element of your work that fascinates me is entity removal. Can you share more about this?
Oh, yes. Such a big interesting one. Question. So, you know, an entity might be something that's, I'm going to say, a seemingly autonomous thing that we might encounter. Might be a spirit, it might be a deity or an angel.
Yeah.
All of those things we could consider entities. In terms of the entities that kind of attach to people, I'm not sure. I kind of come from two worlds, right? The Western world and that shamanic kind of realm as well. So sometimes, you know, the entities present as autonomous things, and sometimes I think they're more a thought form or stuck energy or trauma energy or something like that that maybe is presenting as a thing in the visual space that I might see. So, of course, I didn't believe in entities once upon a time. the first time I encountered an entity, it wasn't actually in my the imaginative liminal space. It was very physical.
Wow.
Yeah.
Say more.
So I was doing some, you know, I was with a girl at this time who seemed to attract a lot of strange phenomenon, right? Yeah. So, you know, if someone has a lot of stuff going on, sometimes poltergeist activity and those sorts of things might happen, or electronics start frying, et cetera, right?
I'm just going to check that everything's still running over here.
Well, we'd had a little smoke of something, and we'd lay down on the bed to do a guided meditation. Mm. And so I'm sitting there, and then I felt something nibbling on my toes.
Oh, wow.
And I open my eyes and look down, and there's nothing there. And I'm like, okay, oh, this is weird. What have I smoked here? Yeah.
This is new.
Yeah. And then so it kind of, you know, I thought, oh, I think I'm just imagining this. I'll just close my eyes and go back to the meditation. Then I felt a weight land on my chest, and it was a solid, heavy weight. And I opened my eyes and got, you know, an internal image of what it looked like. It was like this little critter with four legs and kind of little spikes and little kind of demon-y looking thing, but almost cute because it was kind of little. Yeah.
Little critter.
Yeah. Right. So
cute little demon critter.
Yeah, cute little demon, right? Yeah. Little harmless thing.
Halloween.
Yeah.
We can picture that.
And I'd done the energy training by this point. So I had the technique to clear entities. So I tried it and it didn't work.
Oh. Mm.
And I'm freaking out. Now what do I do?
Naughty entity. Naughty critter.
And then I, you know, I'd always had this relationship with Archangel Michael. Mm. So I called on him and he came down and like threw it off me and blasted it with fire in the imaginal realm.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was done. And I'm like, oh, thanks, buddy.
Yes.
So thankfully that popped into my head and you know, that's Archangel Michael's deal. Mm. Since then, the entity removal has actually worked. Yeah. In all cases, except for one where it only kind of half worked, but it just sort of weakened it.
Okay.
So often people will get a sense, they're like, I think I have an entity attached to me. More often than not, I don't see anything. So I'm not sure, is that just me not perceiving it? Because I know other people in shamanic spaces that see a lot of entities and deal with a lot of entities and even think that they're responsible for psychological conditions, physical conditions, but I don't really encounter that sort of demon-looking thing very often. Mm. More often I find it's a, you know, repressed trauma energy or something like that that's stuck. And that might present in a certain way. So I might see, you know, if I'm working on the heart, there might be like a wall around the heart, you know, like a really metal wall sometimes. So I'm, you know, really seeing just a representation of the energy.
Mm.
And then I'll tune in and ask, you know, should I crack this open? Which is sometimes yes, sometimes no. Yeah. Sometimes they're just not ready to be cracked open like that.
Yeah.
And do that work. So I'm, but yeah, it's not that often that I see entities.
Yeah,
but they are there. I have seen them. And like I said, other people do encounter them a lot. So I'm not sure if, you know, some people's work seems to be more dealing with entities. Mm. Maybe mine's not as much. I don't know. Yeah.
But it's there.
It's there. Mm. Yeah. And I think entities in general interact with our world much more than we realize.
Yeah.
Like there's always, you know, we have our whole spiritual team up there doing their thing and things coming in and out all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's fascinating. I quite often picture, I think it was a movie called Panic Room. There's Jodie Foster and a very young Kristen Stewart, I think. There's a window. It's completely soundproof though, so they can see in. We can't hear them. And some people think to look out and pay attention. Other people just pay no attention at all. And I often picture that. We're completely sometimes so unaware of everything that's going on.
Agree.
Yeah. It's like this soundproof bubble we're
and,
in.
And thankfully most of them seem, you know, benevolent and beneficial.
Yeah.
But there are like negative things out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like people, there's, you know, some people are nicer than others.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And they can really affect us physically too, that's for sure. I know I've experienced it, would have been 6 years ago now, where I had an energy attachment, and it wasn't really noticeable at first, but my actual energy started to be depleted so incredibly, like where I was just physically exhausted all the time. And then even like my thought processes started to not feel like my own. And I was very lucky. I see an energy healer who I work with quite regularly. But it took a few times to kind of, you know, get rid of it. So it was a big wake up call for me to learn how to protect my own energy. And I'm sure that's why it happened, because of the work I do now with holding space and holding circle. You do need to be able to have those boundaries.
Yes. Yeah.
And to create those safe containers. But it was scary when I was going through it.
Yeah. I remember early on in Peru, I was with a friend in Iquitos was the nearest town, and we'd go in there and into the market there and pick up whatever we needed to. And we were going back to where we were, and I saw him drop in energy really quickly. Like he just started kind of, you know, like all his energy's gone. And then he said, look, something's wrong, you know, something's happened. And he felt something was off. So when we got back, you know, he went and saw the teacher, the curandero, and she pulled a curse off him.
Wow.
So someone had thrown a curse on him, and bang, I watched it hit him. And watched him drop so fast, you know, over the space of 20 minutes, he was just depleted in energy. That was a big wake-up call about, you know, we don't really have a lot of that in the West so much, the throwing curses, but over in, you know, somewhere like Peru, it's very prevalent. There's a lot about protecting energy. And I think a lot of the, maybe what we might see as attachments might be actually thought forms from someone else, whether it's intentional or not. Like, you know, if there's a real good projection point of, negative energy towards someone, that can affect them.
That is a very good point.
Absolutely, especially if you're feeling a bit more vulnerable at different times for whatever reason.
It can just come in.
Much more susceptible.
So interesting. We could talk just about this for hours, I'm sure.
100%. We've got your number now. Andrew, you also hold men's circles and retreats. Mm-hmm. Why is this just as important for the men to gather in sacred circles as women?
I'm actually going to say it's more important for men to gather in circle than women.
Lovely.
You know, men are raised still primarily in our culture to be independent and, you know, not have to rely on anyone, not share their feelings, not be emotional, be rational. And, you know, what we see then is men ending up isolated, very high rates of suicide among men, and what they're missing is that community and connection. So that's why I think it's actually more important. And, the men's work that myself and Mark Flood do, you know, it is in a shamanic woo-woo context. It doesn't have to be that way for men's circles. There's a lot of men's circles where they get together and maybe do a bit of a workout or breath work and just talk. So whatever resonates with the men there. But it's something that's really lacking in our culture. Maybe it was there when, you know, guys were younger and playing sports and things. There might have been some of that camaraderie. But there's not really that brotherhood. And it's just so powerful to be held in that space of supportive men. You know, we all know, if someone talks about something, we can all relate to what it is.
So true.
Yeah. And it's, even when we're holding the space, like it nurtures us and fills our cup, because we're also being held in that space. Really, really powerful work.
And very needed, that's for
sure. Very needed. And a lot more is happening, You know, men are really, I've noticed, stepping up a lot. There's a lot of men's circles opening up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have you noticed a big growth?
Big growth.
In a short amount of time, really?
Yes, oh, definitely. Mm. And I think, you know, breathwork's been a great thing for that too. That's sort of you know, a gateway practice.
It's much more palatable, isn't it?
Yes, it's much more palatable for
me. We all breathe.
Yeah, we can do that. It's men, it's Wim Hof. It's, I can do that.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think he's had a big impact there.
Yep.
But also I've noticed, you know, even with clients coming to see me, usually especially with energy work, it was always women. Very rare to get a guy. But now I've had days where it's more guys than women coming to see me, and I'm like, this is beautiful.
Yeah. When people know it's available, and then you know where to go, you know what's on offer.
Yeah,
all you
got to
do is show up. That's right. Yeah.
And admittedly, you know, some of them might have been like, "Oh, my wife said to come along," or you know, this kind of thing. But then you know, they're really open, and they're really actually really sensitive to energy too. Mm. A lot of the time, so it's a big shift. Yeah.
I love that curiosity that, I don't know, I see embodied by so many men. It's just like, oh, yeah, what is that? Like, it's a casual curiosity as you're maybe saying something and their ears pick up. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, what's that about? And it's like, oh, well, it's this. And, oh, really? Yeah, cool.
Yeah, hopefully things are shifting and moving, because it's so true what you say about our culture, that it's so different for males and females and how they're brought up. And when I think about, I've got a son and two daughters, and my son out of the three kids is probably the most sensitive and intuitive.
Wow.
So like, we've always brought him up to be able to express his emotions, which he has big emotions, and like even with spirit and like seeing spirit and stuff like that, he's the one. So if I was to try and just shut that down and go like, it's sad. It's sad that I think yeah, and he probably needs men's circles, to be honest. I think they all do. So
it's
a great idea.
Yeah, just to really be able to express.
I found that, you know, because I had stuff happen to me, like I was more open, and then as I went through, you know, becoming a teenager and young adult, I kind of shut it off a bit, because that's what you do.
They're so hard.
Yeah. And there's no one like now. You can teach your son, hey, keep this open. This is actually valid and real.
Mm.
Yeah. And you know, back to the men's work as well, there's no rite of passage anymore for boys to become men. Women have an obvious, you know, it's a physical thing, but for guys. Mm. And I remember getting to about 30 and finally feeling like, oh, I kind of feel like I'm an adult now.
Yeah.
You know, it took that long because there's no rite of passage.
There's no thing. There's no threshold.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah, hopefully that's coming more and more. And and when we've been doing our men's work, we work in a lot of that ritual work, because it is so powerful.
Mm.
It's
important, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. Mm. And that's a beautiful segue into our next question. So on the podcast, we've delved into the four stages of the divine feminine. So the maiden, the mother, the maga, and the crone. I would love to explore the four archetypes of the divine masculine, the warrior, king, shaman, and lover. Can you take us through each of those?
Well, we could spend a lot of time on this
question.
So I suppose a little different in those masculine archetypes, whereas the feminine you mentioned, there's a progression through
true.
Them. Not necessarily the case in that masculine archetypes.
You don't start at the lover.
No.
Yeah. So,
typically I'd find, you know, men or boys, I'd say in this instance, would start at the warrior.
Yeah.
You know, you see boys running around and playing
sword fights
with sticks, right?
Sure. Tackling
sort of
each
stuff.
Other.
Yeah, wrestling, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So I'd say that's kind of the starting point. And we did change a little bit. The sort of classic masculine archetypes would be warrior, king, magician, and lover.
Mm-hmm.
But because Mark and I both do shamanic work, we thought we'd change it to shaman. Similar, little different, but so for me, you know, when I think of the warrior archetype, you know, again, the first kind of archetype or character that pops to mind would be someone like William Wallace in Braveheart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of, it's always held a special place in me, that movie. I've watched it so many times. And there's a lot around that warrior ethos, which is the the discipline and the perseverance and, you know, this continual putting in energy and slowly increasing your abilities. But that consistency and that discipline is a big part for me and something that's really been integral for my life and my learning as well. And to push through the resistance and that we always have when we're sort of doing practices.
Mm.
It's not that often that we're like, yep, I'm ready to go and do that practice. It's like, yeah. Then there's really, you know, what is a warrior fighting for? Mm. You know, are they protecting themselves? Are they protecting family, community? What's their purpose? Mm. You know, we've got obviously the shadow side of all of these archetypes. Mm. So the shadow side of the warrior would be the mercenary. You know, the mercenary is just getting paid, is just doing whatever for money. Whereas someone like, you know, William Wallace in Braveheart, even though admittedly it starts off as revenge, it does then kind of transmute into, you know, freeing Scotland from the tyranny of England. So there becomes this higher purpose.
Mm.
And in the old warrior cultures, especially, you know, you see this from maybe like the samurai, Japanese kind of area, there's this real honour for each other and for the teachers and for the discipline. I find that a really powerful thing to have this warrior ethos. And it's starting, I think, to come back a lot into our culture. Now I see a lot of like Brazilian jiu-jitsu places.
Yes,
everyone's
true.
Doing yes, Brazilian
right.
jiu-jitsu.
And MMA of all kinds of.
Yeah, which is great. And you know, if you watch like an MMA fight, sure, they go and beat the crap out of each other.
Yes.
But then
it's on Hemo Sundays.
Yeah. I love it too.
I do a lot of martial arts.
Yeah. But then afterwards, they hug each other and they're like, oh, well done. You know,
yeah,
real respect.
That respect.
Right?
Yeah, true.
Such respect. Mm. You know, and that all translates into, you know, having that discipline, that motivation, this kind of sacrifice to keep working for some higher purpose in that warrior ethos. Then I suppose at some point the boy might sort of start turning into the man and might start embodying this king archetype. And for me, the kind of classic of the king would be like King Arthur, the good king.
Mm-hmm.
While there's still the warrior aspect there in the king, it becomes again more about serving the kingdom. So sure, the king is the ruler, but really whatever that domain is, whether it's just himself, whether it's family or community, he's trying to serve the people. He's actually there in service.
Yeah.
So he's listening to them. He's, you know, what are their concerns? And then from that, with, you know, hopefully heart-centered, taking direction or making decisions, allocating resources, whatever it is. Again, we have the shadow side of that, which is the tyrant. And unfortunately, we see a lot of that in
controlling.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it's just whatever I say goes.
Yeah.
So we're wanting a lot of, you know, men in particular coming into their king. And being of service, especially to family and community, protecting them and finding, I guess, what they can do, how they can benefit the community, how they can allocate resources, if it's just an internal sense, like we only have so much energy, where's that best allocated to? What is my direction? Those sorts of aspects, yeah.
Yeah, that intentionality behind it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And, of course, at some point there's the lover. I'll come back to the shaman. Mm-hmm. You know, somewhere along the way romantic interests come up. And I think that the maturation, initially, you know, it might be all very physical for the boy, man.
Mm.
And very selfish, very self-centered in that. Mm-hmm. But the maturation of really stepping into the lover is to see the partner and honour the partner. You know, who are they in them, in and of themselves? Not a projection of what you think they are or what you think love is, but honouring them, seeing what they actually like and responding to them, you know, seeing the divine aspect in the partner too. So, you know, if it's a woman, seeing the goddess in the partner and honouring that higher part. Yeah, so I guess the shadow side there is really the selfish lover who just is after the conquest. I'm sure you can relate to.
Certain people spring to mind.
And then, yeah, this shaman / magician archetype. Again, the classic for me is actually Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sort of magician, druid, shaman kind of character. Similar, I suppose, to the witch. There's a being very in tune with the natural world, the seasons, the energies of plants and things, the spirits that are in the natural world around us. But particularly, you know, once you realize the power of the internal world, the imagination, like you can create anything in that internal world and bring it to life either just in the internal world, but you can also manifest it forth in, you know, the consensus reality and influence events to some degree as well. So once you have that, now you have a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that's a really scary thing. Like, it's been scary for me, and I even yesterday had a client who was like scared of her power. So how do we then learn to trust ourselves with that power is a whole process. But particularly, you know, how can we then best affect change in ourselves? How can we mold ourselves or become what we want to? How can we, you know, shapeshift to become other things and connect to those energies and those spirits of things? What allies can we find in the external world? So, you know, we might be, particularly for the shamanic kind of work, there's that journey work where we're journeying into the liminal spaces, into the other world, and connecting with things there, whether they be a soul fragment of us that might have split off due to a traumatic event and we might encounter it and bring it back, you know, into the self and reintegrate. Or it might be a power animal or you know, a deity or something that we're coming into relationship with, and then they become an ally. So we're, you know, a lot of the shamanic work is sort of this building your power and hopefully using that for good.
Hopefully using it for good. That's it. Coming into the power and using it. Hopefully.
Yes.
One way or another.
And I find actually probably the work with the warrior archetype really is the foundation for how to, you know, how to develop that power and that kind of discipline. And, you know, especially if you start something like martial art, everyone in the room can beat you. Right. So there's a real humility that comes in that, and then you start to learn and you have this respect for yourself and realizing, you know, the, let's say you do use, you're in a situation with someone where you use that power for bad, you know, not in a great way, and you actually hurt the other person. You're like, oh, okay, there's real consequences to abusing my power, and I have to be very careful. So that's a good training ground for, you know, then when you move into the more spiritual work of the shaman or magician, now you're really grounded in how to use that power, what the consequences are if you do use it for bad means, you know, hopefully karmic laws, the threefold law and everything coming in as well.
All those values are set up, all the, you know, groundwork has been laid.
Yeah.
When you work and embody these, you know, cycles, really. Such important work.
Yeah.
We really could do massive series on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot there.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
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 Mm.
Yeah.
I would love to know more about your beautiful land. I'm going to say it again. La Tierra Curativa, and what offerings you hold there.
Yes. So there's a few regular things we have there. There's a space, this big sort of studio ceremony space is for hire. Typically we're often working in using the space, but there's also things like kirtan, which is chanting mantras, often in Sanskrit, and is actually mind-blowing. You feel amazing, you know, chanting these mantras. It's so powerful and something so unexpected for me too. Mm-hmm. So that's a really beautiful thing that's on every couple of months. There's some people, and Madeline Agnew runs that. There's another lady, Claire Obeid, who does lots of various things. She's amazing. She's a priestess, like a real priestess, you know, like, wow. I've had a healing from her and it was mind-blowing. Mm. But she does a lot of stuff like womb yoga she does there. And apparently guys can also come along. I haven't personally. While men don't have the physical womb, the energetic womb is still there. And in fact, the healing I did with Claire, I went back to past lives where I was a woman and pregnant and losing children.
Wow.
And it was so strange.
Yeah.
And I still remember at the end of that when she said, Andrew, and I'm like, who's Andrew? Like, I was completely not there. I was
out. Your body.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's great work too. Mark Flood often does, you know, his shamanic kind of workshops there as well, or storytelling sometimes. So, yeah, there are a few bits and pieces. Other people run, you know, little retreats and workshops. We've had Louise Walker run a few things, like around the Enneagram in particular.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, yoga and things like that. Yeah. So it depends what's on the menu.
Sounds like a beautiful space.
It is, and it has, like, you know, because it's a ceremony space or like a temple space, the energy in the space just accumulates with the more things that are held there. It just builds and builds. Sometimes people will walk into the space and they're just looking around going, whoa, what's been happening in here?
That's incredible. We're going to have to visit.
Definitely.
Now, Andrew, is there a particular quote that resonates with you deeply at the moment that you can share with our listeners?
One quote I just keep coming back to again and again. It's not, you know, particularly flowery or anything, but it's where attention goes, energy flows. And it's just over and over again. It's just something I come back to and keep learning and keep passing on to clients. You know, if I get sucked into the social media vortex, I'm like, I'm losing my energy. Yeah, absolutely. And it still happens.
We're all human.
So it's always something that's present for me.
That's a good one.
It is.
It really, really is.
Packs a punch.
Yeah. And like you said, it's a constant practice. Like, you know, have a mindful moment. You're like, what have I been doing? This clarity of shit.
Yes.
That's why I'm exhausted. That's why I'm so angry right now.
Yeah. Frustrated. It really does drain your energy.
Truly.
Like, oof.
I love this question. Do you have something that you love to work with during ritual that you can share for this episode's Divine Tool of the Week?
Yes, I do. So my most used ritual object is my pipe, my tobacco pipe. And it helps me connect with the spirit of tobacco or mapacho. Mapacho is often used, it's a bit of a misnomer in how it's used, but it's sort of to distinguish it from regular tobacco. It's like, this is sacred tobacco, even though mapacho is sort of the cigarette, the Peruvian cigarette. So it holds the spirit of mapacho. It also holds the connection to my trees in the pipe.
So that's the original.
So it really helps me connect, and I use it if I'm meditating or with prayer or doing intentional ceremonial work. When I hold ceremony, it's used to, you know, clear me and to bless the medicine as well. So I use that a lot.
That's a good one.
It is. And do you have anything brewing you would like to share with our podcast coven, and how can everyone find you and your offerings?
Yes. So the tobacco ceremony is on every couple of months or so at the moment. I think the next one scheduled when this comes out will be the second weekend in Feb. I think that's the 9th and the 10th, the Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
So they're always, and they're kept fairly small, like a maximum of 5 people. So they're nice and intimate.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Mark Flood and I have been doing little bits of men's work here and there. Although the next piece, I think by the time this airs, will have happened already.
Mm.
But we're also doing a lot with the breath work and the drum journey. So there's sort of both types of journey work, the breath work to get into that liminal space, because after you've finished doing breath work, you're definitely in a meditative space and the mind's quiet.
Yeah.
So then that really helps you drop into the journey work of the drum journey.
Mm.
So that's something we've been running. Not quite sure when the next one is that will come out after this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's definitely the main things that are brewing.
Mm-hmm.
And also I finished my psychotherapy course in early December. I finally graduate.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a long road.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that too. And obviously, you know, the people that come to see me are spiritually minded. So, you know, sometimes people will feel a bit silly and they're like, oh, you know, sometimes I hear voices. And I'm like, I think that's totally normal to me. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing wrong with you. It's not psychosis or anything. So I find a lot of people really resonate with that, because there's also that shamanic background.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And are you, out of all the social media handles, because we will be attaching some contact information for you,
yep,
for our listeners, really, to be able to just attach to the show notes. Is it Instagram? What's your handle there? Or is it Facebook?
What
would you prefer?
Yeah, on Facebook, I'm just Andrew Edmonds is the one I use the most.
Okay.
And on Instagram, the Temple of the Soul will pop up.
Okay.
See a little photo of me with a cloud of smoke and my pipe.
Yeah. I love it. That's how you know you're in the right place.
Yeah. I've actually had people twice now. I've been at parties and someone's like, you look really familiar. I've never met you before. Oh, the cloud of smoke. Yeah, that's
smoke me. Dude. Yeah. That's wonderful. I'm sure that loads of our listeners will love to come and visit your space and have a look at everything that you offer. It sounds like hugely important work and well needed and well timed, and hopefully it does grow and expand. And thank you so much for coming here to tell us just a tiny bit about it,
because
although it was like such an expensive interview, we covered so much in such a short amount of time. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's great to, you know, have a good audience. And I know there's so much in the spiritual space, right? There's so many different things and so much to explore.
So
whatever resonates, or whatever little threads of energy feel like they're exciting, just keep following those threads.
That's that curiosity, isn't it? It's those breadcrumbs that are just so enticing.
They are. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you to our podcast coven. We'll be back with you next week.